Hello, and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, and my roommate is also no one, because I have no roommates. I don't live in an apartment with anyone. And with me, I have...
Tax the wealthy and distribute it to everyone else who needs it, like me.
And...
Hey, what's with, like, sex and hot sauce?
Mark, I swear to God... I am putting you in the corner for that.
Oh.
So wait, the hot sauce wasn't just an innuendo? It was actual hot sauce?
Well, I don't know. It's 21 Savage. Do you think he's that lyrically clever? For all I know, maybe he likes his sex like that. I don't know. But still.
Yeah.
By the way, shame on you, Mark, because I double-checked the roundups, and I'm pretty sure you said nothing about that lyric. Nothing. What? How can you do that to me, man?
It's the most listened to album. I didn't give a... I stopped giving a shit.
It's like, what am I paying you for, then? Jeez.
You don't pay me, motherfucker.
Don't be ridiculous. I'm paying you in exposure.
Yes, yes, and in memes, we know.
The spiciest memes. But that's getting ahead of ourselves. So anyway, yeah, back in the saddle for a good old 2019, and I say things have already started off with a controversy involving one of the Paul brothers on YouTube. How grand.
Again? Nothing ever changes.
And apparently Ricegum, too. That's interesting, because I could have sworn he was brutally eviscerated and sacrificed to the Elder Gods by Post Malone or something. That is what happened, right?
I think that was Boy in a Band, actually.
Oh. But anyway, yeah, episode 112. How were your holidays, people?
Well, mine were pretty good. Got some good stuff for the Christmas and the birthday. Saw a couple movies. I saw in the interim since we've been gone, Aquaman, which was pretty good. Spider-Verse, which was excellent. And Bumblebee, which was also pretty good. And I've just been enjoying the usual holiday time off shenanigans. Watched the ball drop on New Year's Eve and drank a whole bottle of apple cider in about an hour, which, yeah, that was worth it. A little gassy in the chest region, but it was worth it. You gotta know how to digest the bubbles.
Ah, yes. I've seen the videos online.
Yeah, gotta be careful with that. And that's pretty much the TLDR version, because I really didn't do much other than that. Just sort of enjoyed my time celebrating my 25th birthday with cheesecake. Woo! Lots Yay! And lots of cheesecake.
You're now a quarter. Me.
Yep, I'm a quarter of the way to death. I can't wait.
Well, damn.
Quarter? Don't be ridiculous. Half.
Yeah, I'll make sure they won't get me when I'm 50. They'll have to drag me all the way down if they want to get me that early.
Is that anything about dragging? The planet's going to become a smoldering, flaming, stinking ball of gaseous shit in like 20 years.
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, Mark, what about you?
The holidays have been pretty alright. I got a few gifts, like, you know, gifts like this Google Home thing, which I ain't got no smart TV stuff or whatever, but hey, it's over the weather, so that's good. And let's see, yeah, folks come over, let's, you know, it's been kind of hectic. Well, not too hectic, but like, you know, kind of things going on around there. Also, some movies, like, yeah, I saw Spider-Verse. It was awesome. Bumblebee. Hey, finally, a good Transformers movie. It's not 2.5 hours.
Yay. Just think, we got good Spider-Man and Transformers movies with Haley Steinfeld in them. Maybe there's a connection.
Indeed.
Yep, and, well, let's see, aside from doing some more writing and some lists, which wink wink, check the site. So yeah, it's been all right.
Indeed. Anyway, as for me, pretty happy with my gifts. Plenty of gift cards, including $50 worth of Buffalo Wild Wings. Woo. What else? Of course, finally got a new crash symbol so I can replace my busted Zildjian. And Alex, I would take your advice, but I already dumped it in the trash because I'm an adult!
Oh. Well, I guess she'll find a use for a stack symbol somewhere else in some other place in time.
A stag symbol? Do I look like I'm going to be playing in Daughters anytime soon?
Well, obviously, no.
Clearly. So yeah, there's that. Got a power bank for my phone. Not bad.
Oh, hey, me too.
Of course, took the usual trips to the movies. Yes, Aquaman, Spider-Verse. Oh, wait, Spider-Verse I saw on the preview screen. And Bumblebee, which I, you know, had varying levels of enjoyment of all of these, but I was pretty entertained. You know, spent some time, whole bunch of Smash, whole bunch of Yakuza, whole bunch of Netflix. I finally caught up on BoJack Horseman and saw that Baki thing that all the kids are on about. Evil prisoner Santa Claus vomiting a grenade. And people wonder why I love anime. Was there anything else? Nah, just the unfortunate crushing reality of having to get back to work and everything, which means I can't sleep in until like 9 o'clock on a Monday someday. But yeah, that's basically about it for me. So now it's about time to get on to the usual shtick. And thankfully we had plenty of big things happening in the interim that we were off on break, which probably means some of this is outdated, but don't worry, we'll be contemporaneous soon enough. But it's important to talk about these things.
Yeah.
So as always, we start with the new song discussions. And of course, there will be a link down in the description so you can follow along with us and have your opinions about our opinions. And to start off the year, we got to do Future now, really? Wait. Aren't we still having to deal with his bullshit on King's Dead? Anyway, so it looks like the Future Man is dropping a new project on January 18th called The Wizard, minus the A, because that's one letter that you would never use to grade his music. Heh, burn. And so we have the lead-off single from it, Crushed Up, which basically just sounds like any other Future track. I'm assuming when he, in the chorus, when he says, like, diamonds crushed up in her face, he's probably not talking, like, literal diamonds. Probably, like, having a little private party in the bathroom, if you know what I'm saying. Although I will give him credit, there is one lyric that I do applaud him for. You can call the narcs, I ain't quitting. Right on, man. Because, you know, F the police and everything. But still, this is boring as shit, and I'm really irritated at how the music video feels the need to have its narration stomp over the lyrics. Jesus, man. Why? Like, just have a clean break. Haven't you ever heard of, like, editing? And, like, editing in breaks and stuff? Come on, man.
Let's see. Same song, same trap sound, which produced by my name, Wheezy. Not that Wheezy, but apparently he's a producer I just noticed. Just noticed while looking up some shit from him. He's the guy that did that one little baby track he did with Drake last year. And, well, yeah, it sounds like any other. Yeah. It sounds like the other trap shit with, you know, with some, I want to say flute, but no, it's some other type of, I don't know, wind instrument, whatever the fuck it is. But yeah, other than that, the song's kind of boring.
Can't even meme on it, which is just disappointing. At least Maskoff had you memeing on Molly Percocet and those dumb flutes. Anyway, moving on from bland as hell trap rap to bland as hell mainstream pop rock whatever nonsense. Turn the key of eternal disappointments, bring me the horizon. Yes, we're about a few weeks away from their newest album, Amo, coming out January 25th. And apparently I missed a single in between the last time we talked about them and this time that we're talking about them. But I'm just going to assume it's bad because this song is bad. The third single from the album, Medicine, and all I can really say is, so this is what it would sound like if Maroon 5 in 2018 was exactly as bad, but it wasn't only the Adam Levine show. Because, I mean, at least there's actual instruments on this thing, but that doesn't change the fact that Dear Lord, this is lame. And, you know, the only interesting thing about it is that the music video looks like a slightly more detailed version of, like, an Adult Swim animated bumper segment. But, you know, I could just watch Adult Swim. Hell, I have it on the TV right now. It's muted, but it's there. Why am I listening to this?
Yeah. There's an interesting poll quote on this piece from Revolver. The quote being, "The new album doesn't sound like what we've done before," and they sure got that right, because Bring Me the Horizon got bit by the Imagine Dragons bug, and who asked for that? Except for a bunch of suits.
2019, everyone.
It was getting started.
Strong foot here. Gotta be 12 months. At least this is getting out of the way now, but, you know, let's move on from all of that to something that can at least mildly be looked forward to in some capacity. So, we've been getting a shitload of collaboration tracks from the fine folks over in Health, and I have been repeatedly invocating when the hell are we getting a new album, because it's been like 4 years since Death Magic. Well, fret no more, people. They have finally announced their upcoming album, Volume 4, Slaves of Fear,
coming
out February 8th. And to kick things off, we of course have the lead-off single, which is the title track. And it's every bit the dark, melancholic piece of noisy, moody, ambient synthy rock that you could imagine. The dingy opening, the floaty ambient vocals, giving way to that kind of thumping, fall-on-the-floor kind of drum beat. Chorus full of synthetic, noisy, industrial, grinding guitars with plenty of those, like, howly electronic squeals. This kind of soft, ominous break with a lot of crystalline melodies at a point where the song slows tempo just a little bit, and then a few huge bursts of, you know, percussive noise to close things out. Although I do have to critique the song a bit, because the momentum feels a little bit off. Like, it kind of feels like it swells into a bit of an anti-climax, but hey, it's certainly more interesting than the last two songs we talked about here. Give me that Health, boy. We got a month.
Yeah. Bring it on. I'm digging these tracks and would like more, please.
Okay, yeah.
Indeed. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. But yeah. There's some good shit right here from Health. Like, they've been putting out has been pretty good.
Indeed. And speaking of stuff with connections to Adult Swim, we actually missed out on a couple of entries in the Adult Swim singles program. So let's get to that stuff post-haste. Is that even a word? I don't fucking know. So first up here, we have from an electronic producer named Bjarki. I'm assuming I'm pronouncing that right. Who's released a new track called...
Sounds like a Mario character.
Bjarki.
It's maybe. Bjarki.
Who knows? It'll be DLC in Smash. But anyway, this track here, Bacteria Ben, which quite frankly sounds like a Dr. Mario character, but that's another story. Yeah, this is a weird one. The intro kind of like veers through a whole bunch of weird like sample and, you know, loop ideas. So there's like almost kind of sounds like Klingon war chants with a heavily sort of digitized voice. Lots of loud buzzes that kind of sound like you're getting in the wrong answers in Jeopardy. Plenty of bleeps and blips. And those last two elements pretty just continue straight on through the song, even when the beat stabilizes a bit more, with some skittering glitched percussion and all kinds of space station glitchy kind of audio oddities, you know, bursting through the track. It sounds like you're listening to sort of a busted recording off a space station. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, pretty cool track. Even the video is, you know, very, you know, Adult Swim esque. You know, they got a, you know, and it got all these like, basically like these hand drawn pics and, you know, them doing all that different shit. Pretty great track. It's pretty good.
And now we move on to the other Adult Swim single here that we got from a producer named Youth Team with the track Glisten, and this one is a bit more straightforward. You got this numbing, droning synth line that carries through the entirety of the song, sort of propping up the bleeping synth melodies alongside these very minimal drums. Plenty of additional layers of electronics and synthetics with plenty of bleepiness and scratchiness and, you know, all that good stuff. Less interesting, but it's a pleasant zone-out vibe tune.
This one is pretty much it's okay. It's okay. Like the first few times, like, all right, it's got the whole bleep bloop bloop type of shit sound like that. Okay, then I can mess with, but like it's all right. It's like maybe not the strongest electronic piece I heard on the singles so far, but it's pretty good.
But anyway, we move on from that, and I can see Alex in the corner. He's very enthusiastic. He's all, put me in, coach. Yeah. So he can go ahead.
Okay then. Okay. So we are just about a little more than a month away from the release of Dream Theater's next upcoming album, I believe album number 14, Distance Over Time, which I'm looking forward to very much. And as our little bit of housekeeping continues, we have the first track of that album, Untethered Angel. And behold, in all of its contemporary metal glory, this is a very pristine cut. The riffs are heavy and tuned down to C. The drums cut nicely through. James LaBrie sounds very steady throughout the track. It doesn't get too crazy. It's mostly steady in 4-4, except for the second verse, which switches up to 7-8 with some nifty polyrhythms thrown in for good measure, because that's just what they do. And of course, there are some excellent dueling solo leads from both guitarist John Petrucci and keyboardist Jordan Rudess. And of course, John Myung's bass is powerful and booming. Glad to hear him back in a prime position again. It's a fine opening track, and at least for me, it's a good sign of how the rest of the album will unfold. And it's been getting some good airplay on Sirius XM Liquid Metal as well. I got a 3 months of that for $1, which is nice. And I also think Mike Mangini is the only guy on the planet who can get away with having all of his cymbals raised 6 to 8 feet up in the air, all in the name of avoiding cymbal bleed.
Ah, so the Glenn Fricker technique.
Yeah, just taken to a big extreme.
Hey, if it works.
Yeah.
And so, you know, listening to this track, there's definitely a lot of that heaviness there, that descending triple note groove thing that repeats repeatedly. A lot of very, you know, like rhythmic chugs and everything. Of course, all those keyboards and stuff kind of sounding like a menacing church sermon. And I kind of like that one part. I forget where it is in the song, but in the video where Rudess is just slamming both of his hands in like the same spot on the keyboard. Like literally they're overlapping each other. Like it's a master hand, crazy hand shit.
Yep. He's got to be very precise with the key placement. Good use of the Hammond organ as well, or whatever that organ was.
And of course, who doesn't love all those fast-running synth sweeps and everything? Kind of reminds me of specific musical sections in Hawkins' The Mountain. Like, almost weirdly specifically. I'm pretty sure it's the same rhythm and melodic progression and everything.
Yeah, there are a little bit of nods in this track. There are even a couple nods to, say, a section of Outcry from Dramatic Turn of Events, which that's a pretty cool thing to reference. Had a good little groove to it.
Indeed. But now, let's move on from that to another long-running metal act prepping a new album for this year, and that is the lads in Children of Bodom. Yep, it's just about time for another visit from Alexei Laiho and company. Newest album, Hexed, due out March 8th. And we have the track here, Under Grass and Clover. Let's hope it's not that kind of clover. And yeah, this sounds like some comfortably familiar territory. Plenty of those squealing lead guitar melodies writing in sync with those super classic cheesy synths. Seriously, I'm pretty sure they've been using the same keyboard for like 20 plus years at this point. Of course, when the verses kick in, the synths kind of have a heavier tone to them, kind of like they're filling in for the bass, which is emphasized by, you know, the guitar sort of breaking off for a second and not playing so that, you know, it has breathing room. And of course, leaving room for Alexei Laiho to still fucking scream like a motherfucker. Seriously, still quite good, even if the songwriting varies from album to album. Sort of trades on the familiar territory with all those harmonizing, shredding solos and everything. And of course, the thunderous double bass drum work driving the beat, all that stuff. Feels maybe a little bit more on the melodic side than what their last record was. We'll have to see what the big picture is on this one when it drops in March.
Yeah, this is supposedly meant to be, the whole album anyway, it's meant to be more of a throwback to their early 2000s sound, like on Follow the Reaper and Hatebreed Death Roll. There's plenty of emphasis on melody to this track, which I like, along with a good heaviness to the groove. So this has got me a bit more interested with this album, considering their past few albums have been kind of hit or miss for me.
Interesting. So, yeah, there's that to look forward to. And speaking of big March releases, so this is happening on March 22nd. It appears the lads in American football aren't yet done with, you know, getting back together after that period in the 90s. Following up on their most recent second self-titled album, they've announced their newest album, which is titled, and let me see if I have this written correctly here, American Football. Three self-titled albums in a row.
Dang.
Well, I mean, at least it'll give me something to listen to that isn't Weezer. But yeah, of course, the guys in American Football are, you know, already promoting their newest album with the lead single Silhouettes, which, you know, sounds like that good old, you know, classic emo vibe thing with, you know, plenty of mathier tendencies in there as well. You have that intro xylophone combined with, like, a whole bunch of other wind chimes and instrumentation, which practically sounds like my backyard on a windy morning. You think I'm kidding about that. And then, of course, eventually all the instruments kick in. They're all playing super, you know, delicately, but also rather intricate. There's plenty of those super atmospheric vocals wavering across the very clean, you know, sort of mathy guitar leads, the grooving bass, and there's even an extra hint of vocal orchestration underneath that kind of props things up for this really weird numbing effect. Of course, coated in reverb, because that's just kind of how the production of these things go. And it just kind of drones on for, like, you know, 7 minutes, sort of vibing in and out of, you know, these breaks where there's no drums, some drums, the melody switch up here and there. Of course, there's plenty more accentuation from those damn xylophones. It's all right. I'll keep an eye out on this one when it drops.
Yeah, this is certainly a very bright sounding song, at least, but it's something I can dig. I've never gotten too deep into American football, so any excuse for me to check them out is always welcomed, I guess.
Indeed. And now it's time for the last song this week, and I'm going to ask you all a very important question here, and I need you to be honest. Have you heard about this this person named Ariana Grande? Because I have. It seems like she's been in the news a lot for the past 6 months or so.
Vaguely.
Though, you don't though say. Truth be told, I haven't been keeping up with much of it because, yeah, like, I don't know what's going on. Because apparently there's lots of things, but I don't know what those things are. I'm confused. I don't pay attention to celebrity gossip and everything. I just know the music. And apparently, even though she already dropped a brand new album back in August, if I recall correctly, it appears that she is already prepping a new album called Thank You Next, coming out at an unreleased point in 2019. Apparently, from what I heard, she's milking personal drama for, you know, fame and benefits and whatnot. And so we have the second single from the album here, Imagine, which, first off, why does she do the future Migos thing? Literally, first line of the song, she goes like, skirt. No, not like I'm wearing a skirt. Like, you know, I mean, the song is already training on this slow, drifting kind of 6-8 trap rap rhythm that all sounds like, you know, this cooing lullaby sort of thing. Plenty of, like, she's making, like, sound effects and ad-libs and stuff, which, quite frankly, just sounds, you know, like Migos, but with a more pleasant tone to it. You know, the lyrics are just kind of, you know, typical romance stuff, you know, very nice, pleasant, poppy sounding. There's a bit of a pickup in the, you know, near the end of the track instrumentally when there's lots of pianos and strings to kind of build on top of that basic vibe and everything. Although, oh dear God, those vocal squeals. It's like listening to Camila Cabello all over again. Eh. Why? Well, I...
Yeah, speaking of that last part... I don't know why that last part where she coos like that reminds me of how Mariah Carey coos most of the time with her songs when she hit that high note. I'm like, am I listening to the right track or something like that? And they know the lyric video, which, you know, is very, got that glitchy art shit going on, like the whole, you know, the whole computer glitchy thing where it's like, your screen looks like it's fucking up, but it's, you know, that sort of shit, which, okay, the artwork, okay, that's kind of good on that. But yeah, the song, I'll take it, it's like, I mean, it sounds pleasant enough. But yeah, whatever.
Yeah, it's basically about all we have to say for now. And that basically wraps up the, you know, winter break catch-up song discussion thing. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we got plenty of news to talk about, including the resolution of the Best of 2018 cliffhanger, which you should probably know by now. Otherwise, are you not even listening to this show? Four major topics here to discuss. The first one of these being the latest entry into Album Watch 2019. Well, perhaps it might. I mean, 2019 is shaping up to be a pretty big year for certain genres, especially in terms of like high-profile metal releases. I mean, we're pretty much guaranteed a new Slipknot record this year, if all the press is to be believed. We're getting the first new Rammstein album in like 10 fucking years. That's some pretty hype shit to look forward to. And there's probably a whole bunch of other stuff we're missing. But perhaps most shockingly, it might be happening. 2019 may finally be the year that the long-awaited newest album from Tool may finally materialize in a record store near you. And here is why. Okay, so it's been recently reported by the ever-so enigmatic frontman Maynard James Keenan that he has finally finished recording the vocals for the album. And this is important because, as he stated repeatedly, the vocals are always the last aspect of any Tool album that gets recorded before it gets sent off to mixing and mastering. You know, because there's so much tinkering around with the actual instrumentals and stuff, he wants to make sure all that's in place before he goes down to lay down the vocals and everything. Quote, from his actual Twitter, update, final vocals tracked months ago, then US-UK Euro run with a perfect circle. If Tool all instruments are tracked, long process of mixing now. Meanwhile, write film track with Pucifer for 2020, and troll the band's Facebooks with wine posts. Yep, that sounds like Maynard, alright.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, they pretty much already have a beefy amount of tour dates set up at various venues, primarily like the festival circuit in the U.S. and abroad. So they're definitely making some moves. It could actually happen.
Yes, it could. But like with other things, I'll believe it when I have a copy of it in my hand or in my Apple Music library. Either way.
Aw, don't be like that. It's definitely gonna happen.
It's been 12 years.
Vocals are done. There's no choice at this point. Otherwise, okay. It would be basically playing their hand.
Okay, so Maynard, guys in Tool, just give us a release window, please. Something, anything.
And in the meantime, we'll just be keeping ourselves amused with all other manner of entertainment, whether it be, online streaming anime, other music, or maybe even video games. Including this brand new game console courtesy of Soulja Boy Tellum. Well, go on, Alex. Tellum.
Okay, so a bit of background information first. The retro game video game market is kind of in a weird state of flux right now. Thank you, Sony.
$60, what the fuck?
Yeah, but that hasn't stopped Mr. Tellum here from getting in on this action. by deciding to crank. See what I did there? Some video game consoles of his own. I said consoles, plural.
There's yes, two of them.
The two notable ones being the, quote, Soldier Game console and the Soldier Game handheld. You really didn't call it the Soldier Boy. What the hell?
Come on, we're doing your job for you of coming up with better puns. Come on.
Yeah. And if it sounds too good to be true, that's because it is. These are not his consoles. These are cheap ROM boxes that play emulated video games in very, I'll just say, poor quality. If you're familiar with YouTube channels such as RGT85 or Rerez, you know, Shane, you'll know that they've been following this whole bit of insanity from the very beginning. Mostly because it turns out he's been selling more than just video game consoles. He also has knockoff AirPods called the Soldier Pods and a knockoff Apple Watch called the Soldier Watch. Apparently, the key to success is to sell cheap knockoff merchandise you would find in a flea market.
Okay.
He does have money, right?
I don't even know anymore.
I mean, who wants a side hustle like this, you know?
I don't know. Like, I still have very vivid memories of back when he was actually popular and he was trying to, you know, get that gamer cred. He even got called out by the guys at ScrewAttack back when that website was actually more than just Death Battle.
Oh, yeah. That, yeah, I suppose that would happen. And sure enough, as the weeks continued on with this whole bit of insanity, people chimed in on it. Even JonTron chimed in on it.
Oh boy, the famous internet white supremacist sympathizer?
Yeah, that guy.
Oh.
Douche.
Yeah, but he stood his ground. He unveiled even more console revisions, including one such that is pretty much just an Android box, which is just Android OS in a console that's actually kind of popular in China. And would cost you $400.
Wow. Oh, hell wow. No.
Yeah. Yeah. He even said in an interview with Rolling Stone, honestly, I feel that everything is 100% legit and there will be no reason for any legal ramifications or anything like that.
Clearly, someone hasn't been paying attention to emulator sites in the past few months.
No. And, yeah, look, there's a difference between distribution and selling. There's a difference between preservation and selling. There's a difference between having a ROM for your own use when you own a physical copy and selling. And sure enough, in just a couple of weeks, well, we heard this from Mr. Tellum. I had to boss up. I didn't have a choice. Nintendo got to him. So much so that if you go to soldiergame.com, well, for a time anyway, it redirected to the Nintendo website. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So ends the tale of Soldier Boy Tellum's venture into video game entrepreneurship. My God, what an idiot.
I mean, gee, Soldier, if you really wanted to make money through, like, venues like this, you should look at your buddy Chameleonaire.
Yeah. He managed to use his money very wisely. Isn't that right, Todd in the Shadows?
Yeah, that's true.
Oh boy, I don't know who's more dumb, him or the guy that's trying to sell Kingdom Hearts 3 or trying to do that shit.
Oh god, that happened like 20 minutes away from my city. What the hell?
What the hell is Gastonia? That's like
local
a fucking
mafia and everything.
That's like a fucking country out of Europe.
Yeah.
That
nothing good ever comes out of Gastonia.
Damn.
Gastonia, wasn't that an Outkast album? But yes, the amusing gaming stories intersecting with music, and at least this was more entertaining than hearing 21 Savage in that Mortal Kombat 11 trailer. Or having Weezer and Brendan Urie at the Game Awards. Why? Like, come on, get Andrew WK at least, jeez. But anyway, moving on to the next topic here. And of course, the thing that this episode, as always, is named after, because it is time for the lineup to this year's edition of Coachella. Of course, taking place across 2 weekends, April 12th through April 14th, and April 19th through April 21st in good old Indio, California. And of course, both weekends will be streaming live on YouTube for the first time. Well, I mean, they've streamed on YouTube before, but usually it's just been one weekend or the other. Now it's both.
Yeah. Yay.
Which means there's even less excuse for me to pay the cost to travel out to California and to give money to a festival run by an asshole who donates to anti-LGBTQ plus initiatives.
Yeah.
Plus,
just not worth it to go to Indio. It's a fucking desert town 9 to 10 to 11 to 12 months out of the year.
Pretty much, yeah. Although I imagine it's got to have more going on than a Hesperia, California, but we'll get to that. So let's look at the day-by-day lineup. So let's start with Friday, April 12th and 19th. Your headliner is Childish Gambino, and all the names listed under that include Janelle Monáe, The 1975, DJ Snake, Diplo, Rufus Du Sol, Blackpink, Anderson .Paak,
yay,
Nationals, Kacey Musgraves, Juice WRLD. Jeez, I hate that you can still say world even without the O. I feel like I'm validating the typo. Anyway, Ella May, Los Tucanes de Tijuana, Fisher, James Smith, Nina Kravis, Rosalia, Gorgon City, Kruangbin, Jaws, Charlotte Gainsbourg, Sophie, Tierra Whack, Yellow Days, Ives Tumor, Caro Caro Benito, JPEG Mafia, Let's Eat Grandma,
the fuck?
Turnstile, Ross from Friends, which I assume doesn't actually literally mean Ross from Friends.
Yeah.
And that's about all the names I recognize. The text gets smaller from there, and I recognize
this. I recognize Ross from Friends because I heard him on that Brain Feeder X collection I listened to like earlier, which it's good because Brain Feeder, because, yeah, he does some good shit there.
Oh, well, I'll do apologies, Mr. Ross. But anyway, who wants to tackle the Saturday lineup?
I'll go ahead and do this one.
Okay.
Okay, so for Saturday, we have the headliner of Tame Impala.
Hmm.
Yeah, and rounding out this bill, we have Solange, Kid Cudi, minus Kanye West, who's not going to be part of Coachella this year.
Apparently due to disputes about the stage.
Oh.
Okay. Weezer. Aphex Twin. Yay.
Nice.
Yay.
And we got J Balvin. Billy Eilish? Eilish?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Eilish.
Eilish. Okay, I got it right. Bass Nectar. Fortet. Christine and the Queens. Wiz Khalifa. Okay. Mac DeMarco. Gornagi. You So Fucking Cute When You Smile. Bazzy. I know, I hate it too. Maggie Rogers. Sheck West. Griffin, Bob Moses, Mr. Easy, Sabrina Claudio, Deep Dish, FKJ, Sir. Wait, Idris Elba?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Idris Elba music. People Magazine, Sexiest Man Alive, Idris Elba?
Yep, okay, the same one no one can resist, even Daniel Craig.
Make him James Bond already. And, all right, and we have, rounding out the bottom of the list here, Jane, Turnover, Sales, Stefan Bodzin, Arizona, Murda Beats, Jambini, Sean, Lil Sims, and that's about it. Everything else gets a little too obscure even for me.
Well, I mean, there was Serpent with Feet, who was hitting up a lot of the year-end best-of lists.
Okay.
There's also Hop Along and Ty Segall and White Fence. Interesting. And now that would leave Mr. Mark to round out the Sunday lineups.
Yes, the Sunday lineups. And that includes Miss Thank You Next herself, Yana Grande. And we have Khalid. Zed. Okay. And hell.
Gesaffelstein?
Gesaffelstein.
Isn't that a Berserk character?
No. Alright. Alright, you got...
I'm pretty sure he's the guy who made a deal with the God Hand and became Femto. Or am I thinking of Griffin?
You're thinking of Griffin.
Alright. Also have Bad Bunny. Alright. Dylan
oh
Francis.
Oh boy, the Legaton Post Malone.
Yep. Yep. Like I said, Dylan Francis, right? Churches, you know, with a V. YG. Srez D. I don't know. Yeah. Playboy Cardi. Her.
Whoa, careful, Mark. Are you doing this? Are you doing the Saitama routine? Breathe, man.
All right. Blood Orange. Right? Pusha T. Oh, hey, another person on my album list that's here. Let's see. Unknown Motor Orchestra. Hey, catch it now. 99.9%. A title of some episode of an anime that premiered today. Wink, wink.
I still need to watch it.
Yeah.
Yes, watch it for the good boy.
Yeah. And this Gucci Gang. Which I'm guessing that's a Little Pump, and I don't care. Let's see. Yeah.
I saw a story about that. Apparently, that's a group that he's forming with Gucci Mane and at least one other rapper, but I don't care.
Wow, talk about awful.
Okay, you got John Hopkins, Sophie Tucker, Burna Boy. Oh hell, Burna Boy. Let's see. Lizzo, SOBRBE. Okay, they're still doing that thing. Nightmare, Perfume, 070 Shake. Okay, let's see, Rico Nat. Okay, Rico Nasty.
Not bad.
I don't know who else because I can't remember the names and it's getting small, so that's all I can figure out who's. At least all that I know, but yeah, there's Sunday's list.
Yeah, there's more here, and I'm even looking at a clearer version on the Coachella Twitter, and I don't recognize who any of these people are, except for maybe Ice Age. That's about it. Who are you people? But yeah, you know, for all the people that apparently are motivated enough to go out to this yearly Eric Andre disappointment. And, you know, gives me another excuse to repeat the same thumbnail for the third year in a row. There you go.
And Idris Elba, jeez.
Yeah, I think he's going to be doing, like, a DJ set or something, last I heard.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because I think he does have the DJ shit, like, he is, you know, he do that shit in the UK and all that.
Well, I mean, of course, how else do you make a living in the UK? By being a DJ. I mean, it's not like you can succeed there by booking a series of shows at various venues where no one shows up at. Speaking of which, previously on Decibel Boost! In 2019, to cover all the good shenanigans that will be happening. For example, wait, hold up, fucking Threaten again?
Oh,
we still have to deal with this douchebag. Again, it's already...
you fuck.
2019. Yep, that's right, folks. We got some unfinished business here. Breaking. Over our break from weekly podcasting, we just had to get more developments in the saga of Mr. Jared Eames, also known as Threaten. And I still feel like an idiot every time I have to say that name. Now, unfortunately, this is not a lawsuit. Not yet, anyway. But hopefully this will be the last we'll have to speak on it in substantial chunks for sure, because God damn, this just gets more stupid. So, yeah, as we left off last time, he was taunting the press over his whole fake tour thing, and there was, like, one or two interviews with his various extended family members, but now it seems like we actually have information courtesy of Threaten himself, courtesy of two different profiles and interviews with him, one from Rolling Stone magazine and one from the BBC. And of course, they paint a, of course, bad picture of the guy because he's kind of a douche. So let's do this damn thing for the last time. First, let's start off with the Rolling Stone profile. You know, interviewing him about, the whole thing. There's a lot of golden quotes from him in this, including, "There was no way that I was going to get enough attention being a rock artist in 2018 unless I did something to get people to pay attention." Wow, you think?
You mean being not Imagine Dragons wasn't enough? You had to do something even stupider?
Clearly. And then it just kind of goes into recounting, the piece from there. It mentions, you know, how everything unraveled at the exchange, even naming that bartender Jonathan Minty Minto was the one that was digging through his online presence during his suspiciously empty set. "It's a publicity stunt," he says, "but the music is very real." Quote from Threat. You know, he goes through recapping his small town origins in, like, Moberly, Missouri. His dad worked as a drug and alcohol counselor. The first thing you would see in driving through town is a hill with a grave on it. And even though he was in Satis with his brother, and they were considered a brother band, as the article describes it, they apparently became, like, Moberly's version of Oasis.
Okay. And that made Alex, well, cringe me more.
Sorry, go ahead.
Just for context, Oasis is a band made up of two brothers, Liam and Noel Gallagher, who not only hate each other, but are two of the most despicable people on the planet.
I second that shit. And just to accentuate this further, just to borrow a quote from Jared's brother Scott, "He'd show up to family events like he was playing a show. Jacket and sunglasses and the walk. It got to the point where most of us were just rolling our eyes."
I would too.
Yeah, but even despite that animosity, Jared claims that he stayed with Satith because it supposedly kept the family together. At least according to a quote from his mom anyway, but who knows how that actually went down. And now, of course, here's where the story begins to burgeon more fully. At age 17, he moved in with Kelsey, his current wife and then his girlfriend, while he was working at a fast food restaurant and attending Columbia College, earning a bachelor's degree in, get this, psychology. Saying, quote, "I've always been fascinated with human behavior and marketing, and how you can implant an idea in someone's mind." So he thought his career would be like Inception or something?
It was either going to be that or working for the...
Yeah. So fast forward to like 3 years later. By the way, for reference, he was planning to pursue his master's as well. This is when shit gets real. According to the claims he made in the profile, one day he started coughing up blood. And as he says, "The sink was filled with blood. I thought, okay, I'm dead." So basically, with that little bit of context in mind, this whole thing is now basically just stupid Breaking Bad.
But when does the meth come into play?
He was probably doing it the whole time, so...
Is he cooking?
I guess so. I mean, you know what they say, living is dying. I'm doing the hand and shirt thing right now.
You know, somebody should have given him a good cup of coffee, would have been go, "Why the hell are we cooking meth?"
"My God, that is the best coffee I've ever tasted. Why the hell are we making meth?"
So pretty much at that point is when he decided, you know what, I'm going to make this whole fucking rock star thing happen. So in 2012, the two of them pack up and move to Hesperia, California, where she took an office job and he was living cheaply off of his savings, which apparently Despite coming from a small no-name town, he had a lot of savings. So much so that he was able to spend $10,000, approximately, on recording a lot of the material that he was working on, even going as far as shelling out to have his record mastered by Greg Colby, a record engineer who's had a long storied history dating all the way back to at least the 70s, having worked with many artists throughout the years, including, and here's a short version of his, discography he's worked on, John Lennon, Edgar Winter, Bruce Springsteen, Blue Oyster Cult, David Bowie, The Ramones, Rainbow, Bon Jovi, Anthrax, Living Color's debut album Vivid, and even moving into the modern era, we have Kings of Leon, Alabama Shakes, Bon Iver, Fall Out Boy Save Rock and Roll, Slater King, American Football's comeback album, Flea Foxes, and so much more. Seriously, I am leaving out just a ton of stuff here. So, you know, he's obviously trying to go big, although apparently the record engineer kind of had some backhanded compliments about the material he was working on, but, who doesn't? When crafting his persona, he claimed that he idolized the villains of rock and roll, hoping to create a David Bowie-esque alter ego in the vein of guys like Alice Cooper or Marilyn Manson. Quote, "If you're the hero, you're going to get a quarter of the attention of the bad guy. A happy story lasts a day, but a tragedy is going to last a lifetime." And, you know, there is some truth to that. I mean, how many people love D.L. Brando versus Jonathan Joestar?
I'll offer a counterpoint. Sometimes it takes like 25 years for a movie about your life to get made. And then Rami Malek wins a Golden Globe for it.
Oh, yeah. And yeah. I heard that movie won Best Picture.
Yeah, because, Hollywood.
In the drama category, even though it was musical, it beat up Black Panther.
Yeah. And here's the golden quote here. That this is the most self-indulgent piece of shit I've heard said by this guy yet. "I'm willing to do what it takes to try to bring rock back into the spotlight."
Oh, God.
Hey.
"I'm staring off in just pure space like this is The Office right now. You're going to save rock and roll." God. Really. Which is why he paid for all those fake likes, paid for a fake tour, and, you know, basically does a bad pastiche of 80s rock. Look, I know there's been a lot of hashtag discourse recently about whether or not rock is dead or not, and I'm not really interested in that discourse because I think everyone's a little bit off base here about everything, but you are so not going to save rock and roll. Jeez. You can probably save the princess in a Mario game.
Yeah.
You know, saying rock and roll is like me saying I saved anime.
Yeah. Anyway, in claiming how he developed his persona, he cites influence from figures like his self-professed favorite comedian of all time, Andy Kaufman. Which is a shame because you're not funny, Mr. Threaten.
Yeah. And at what point does he start to wrestle women? Because, you know, he wants to be a women's wrestler.
What?
That's something Andy Kaufman did.
Oh.
It's true. Look it up. So then we get to, the setup for the tour, you know, getting all the musicians together, spending $5,000 to book all the venues through his alias Casey Marshall. And then at that point, the September before the tour, he was coughing up blood again to the point where he was finally forced to visit a doctor. Seriously, that's worth noting. That he refused to speak to a doctor after the coughing fit, claiming, quote, "Those people are inadequate. They're not going to know what they're doing." Even though his wife was apparently studying or either working as a nurse at the time. Class act.
Oh, boy.
So, that September, when he visited the doctor, he was told that he suffered from an abnormal heart condition and could, quote, internally bleed to death at any moment. But you gotta admit, that's pretty brutal. He could probably market that into a successful death metal career.
Yeah, or, you know, puke it out. It'll make for a good song title.
Indeed. You know, really amp up that Satith performance art somewhat. But, you know, it's worth noting that there might be a lot of sketchiness around the Threaten story, but this is the one thing that's pretty much can be certifiably true. His various band members did corroborate that he was looking rather sickly throughout the tour, so we pretty much know what's up with that now. And, of course, he claims that he doesn't plan on resurrecting Satith or getting back in touch with his brother Scott anytime soon, unless it's for a documentary, which he hopes to make with the footage that his wife shot. Quote, "If it served the story and it would be more interesting for there to be a reconciliation, then I'd consider it. Other than that, I have no interest."
Okay. Hang on. Let's take a look at some of the great rock documentaries of all time. Anvil, Some Kind of Monster, This is Spinal Tap. Who's going to care about this of all things?
Like, at the end of the day, you're only really niche internet famous. Like, sure, you've gotten profiles in all these magazines and everything, but your music has been so thoroughly mocked, you know, even if we subtract all the stage, the pageantry, the fakeness of everything, your music sucks. Who gives a shit?
You're no Dewey Cox.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
And you're no Tommy Wiseau either.
Yeah. I'm fed up with this world. I'm going to rip a sink out of the wall. You know, and hopefully this will highlight the different instruments and the different things I can do on the different instruments. That's too good. Someone's like uploaded those interviews anywhere. Those are fucking great.
I don't think Seth Rogen's gonna buy the rights to this story anytime soon.
Definitely not.
Nope.
Now to move on to the other profile done on him via the BBC, courtesy of Jessica Lusenhob. You know, because these people deserve to be credited. I mean, you know, Jared's not crediting people he takes from. So she pretty much went directly to Hesperia to visit Threaten in his home, which was a pretty questionable decision. She was even warned by his brother, quote, "It's all smoke and mirrors with Jared. He'll lead you to believe there's something big to get you to bite, only for you to be let down. Be careful." And describing Jared's house, he apparently lived in a relatively humble, you know, single-story house, although apparently he had lots of framed portraits of himself on the side and lots of black t-shirts and cargo shorts in his wardrobe. And, you know, it's going through a lot of the usual stuff, even, you know, claiming Jared says that his site reports sales of 55,000 copies for his debut EP. That's bullshit. We will explain why in a minute. Stick a pin in that. You know, the usual tour preparing stories that have been recounted by all the other accounts from the other band members, except this one is actually complete with group shots. Not any of Jared, but the other instrumentalists all seem, yay, we're so happy to be going on tour and whatnot. So, you know, it starts the first show of the night in good old Camden, England. Mr. Marshall promised 291 tickets, over half of the venue's capacity, but John Viner, the owner of the venue, was, quote, quite angry, even saying, quote, "I told Casey by email never to contact us again." Right into the point. Now, moving on to the next venue, Trillions in Newcastle, the band Dogflesh, fronted by musician Roy Moore, was quoted as saying, "We thought, yeah, this guy's obviously the real thing. We thought if we could get on with their booking agent in America, maybe they can open up a few more doors for us." However, not only did that not happen, Threaten did not even acknowledge Dogflesh backstage, which is usually just poor, you know, etiquette on the part of musicians. And at that point, Moore basically just bailed before their set, in which there was only five people in the crowd, two of which were members of his band. Then, of course, comes back around to the Exchange show, which contains an account by Ghost of Machines member Billy John Bingham, who claims that 10 minutes before the band went on, that band being Threatened for the record, they were pulled over by one of the managers who said, quote, "They haven't sold any tickets. I've asked them to cough up the money that we've lost or we're losing on the bar. Otherwise, they're going to close the venue." And at that point, Eames was forced to withdraw 400 euros from an ATM and then got into an argument with a manager. And of course, that's when, you know, again, Mr. Minty found all the fake shit and everything, all the websites linked back to the same GoDaddy account. Well, actually, no, that one was even discovered by a local London music blogger, Tim Williams, the editor-in-chief of Sick Chirps, who, you know, found all the fakeness. Although, just as a quick tangent, apparently Jared has a few cats in his house. They're adorable cats. I just felt like saying that. And then, during the profile, at one point, you know, reciting Lusenhop's words exactly, he'd reached under his bed and fished out five notebooks. showed me line after line of email addresses, passwords, and lock symbols to denote they've been locked down or flagged as spam. So basically, he had, like, a whole catalog of, like, you know, fake profiles that he was using for, you know, YouTube, Facebook, spam, and everything. So I guess at a certain point, he just said, fuck it, and decided to farm all that stuff out to, you know, the like farms. And he even had 8 phones
eight.
Store all of this information.
8 phones?
What? Why does somebody need that many burner phones?
I guess he got caught one too many times.
That
need to
that
spread out
phones.
His escapades across multiple phone IPs or whatever the fuck they're called.
And if I Kevin Gates talk about got too many phones, he got 2.
Eh. And then, of course, there's another wrinkle here. He had a Gmail account under the name E. Evie Knows It.
What?
Huh? Dude. That sounds like the kind of fake name that even Arrested Development would toss out for being too dumb. Come on. And claims to have sent out emails to various news publications with the following text. Subject line. Urgent news tip. The musician going by the name Threaten is a total fake. He faked a record label, booking agent, Facebook likes, and an online fan base to book a European tour. 0 people are coming to the shows, and it is clear that his entire operation is fake. Please don't let this man fake his way to fame. Please expose him. Now, here's some important details here. The message was post-dated November 2nd, the day after the start of their Break in the World tour. And even has an Excel sheet, you know, database of emails to various music outlets, including Consequence of Sound, Rolling Stone, Pitchfork, Metal Sucks, and of course, the BBC. Even claiming, quote, I manufactured my own destruction. My idea was, how am I going to fill these empty rooms? I'm going to fill them with eyes from the digital world. That was the objective from the beginning.
Okay, hang on a minute. Let me see if I'm getting all this right. This guy put in all this time and effort and all this money to fabricate an identity and get his name out there to look like an idiot on the internet?
He's the mastermind pulling the strings, man. He probably learned all this stuff from watching Jordan Peterson lectures on YouTube.
Okay, this is stupid Breaking Bad. Holy fuck.
Yeah. And stupid Black Mirror.
It's time to fact-check the stupidity once again from the fine, diligent Mr. Vince Neilstein over at Metal Sucks. Fact-checking 2 important claims here. First, the idea that he manufactured his own destruction via the emails. And then the other being the number of orders Threatens got in. First, we'll deal with the email thing. Metal Sucks confirms that they did indeed receive the email from the Evie Knows It alias on November 17th,
huh?
Which was at least a good week after the stories first broke. Jessica even showed Vince an email that was supposedly sent to Metal Sucks on November 7th. However, they checked through all the Metal Sucks emails, including the spam folder, and never found that email. Worth noting that the PRP also received the November 17th email, but Metal Injection did not, and neither did BBC nor Consequence of Sound. So he can't even keep his dates consistent. Okay, then. And now for the last detail here, the claim that he sold, you know, thousands of CDs. And Vince refutes this by giving a detailed personal explanation along with how receipts and online shopping worth. To wit, on November 12th, Vince ordered a Threaten t-shirt, which he says he wore to the Metal Sucks holiday party as a gag, even saying that it went over great and that he'll never wear it again, which, you know, I really gotta give some props to someone who's willing to go that far for a joke.
Yeah.
That is the level of comedy I aspire to.
Yeah.
So he posts the email receipt he got from Threaten's website, which was marked number 10,025. Now, he extrapolates from there, you know, the details, that Threaten's website was built using a Wix template, and that such templates and website design tools that allow for, like, building online shops and stuff, they often mark order numbers with, like, a base figure that then counts further from there. In the case of Wix, their base number for any and all orders for specific online stores is 10,000, and then successive orders are counted upwards from there. Meaning that, if anything, Vince's order from the store was the 25th order, you know, legit order that his website ever received. And that's basically everything, every stone unturned at this point of the Threatened story. Now the only thing that could conceivably happen from here is the lawsuits. If there are any.
Yeah, and this just makes you wonder, you know, if we had this level of journalistic integrity with all the political discourse going on right now, we'd be in much better shape. But then again, that's not what gets the views now, is it? Fuckers.
But, yeah, so, Jesus Christ, this whole fucking story. So, he's trying to claim that, like, he manufactured the whole tour, but also manufactured, like, the controversy. Like, he was going to be, like, the big tip-off. Like, he can't even keep all... I counted at least three different dates listed amidst all of those emails and shit. Like, come on, dude. Come on.
He'd be fucking crisis, up.
Dude. Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yep.
Oh, well, at the very least, we won't have to talk about this guy until, again, he gets the Fyre Festival treatment. By the way, isn't it great that we're getting that documentary on Netflix this month?
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit, that's right.
That is some tasty stuff. Anyway, now to move on to the last bit of business this week, and the new album releases for January 11th, 2019, of which there's barely anything because the year's still getting up underway. But there are two releases of note here to point out here. First up is the newest Born of Osiris album, The Simulation. And, of course, the other big one, the newest studio album from Soilwork called Verkleiten. So now is where we clean house and get the hell out of here. So, Alex, where can they find you on the internet?
As always, the name is Or of Azure, where you'll find me doing whatever stupid crap I feel like doing that day. You know what it is.
Mark, what about you?
As usual, Matt Habit Media at Twitter, and of course on my site, themindhabit1@wordpress.com. I did a whole lot of shit, like the past, well, since we've been on break, like, you know, best of list, worst of list, all that shit, and of course, time of the season with the, with the season starts, like, with anime. I'm sure it won't get no discourse to get all way too late.
I am snoping out on that show so hard, and I haven't even hit play on the first episode. Anyway, as for me, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, CuriousCat, at Rob Barracuda. Email me, robert@surrealresolution.com, for questions, comments, concerns, and inquiries. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Google Play and iTunes. New audio-only episodes go up every Wednesday. Video highlights usually go up on the weekend over on the YouTube channel, so subscribe and hit the bell tab so you're notified when stuff goes up there. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, @SurrealReso. Like us on Facebook. Visit us at surrealresolution.com. And, you know, be sure to listen to all the stuff. Episodes of Despopies. And episodes of Podcast O&A, which may come back soon.
Yes, by the time you hear this, Season 4 will already started. And, fair warning, we're going to get into that discourse in a couple weeks. It's going to get ugly.
Discourse, debt course, every course. Be sure to keep up with our written content. Still going strong with the JoJo's reviews and everything. So if you need that manly Italian content, be sure to jump into our Discord chat as well. If you want to argue over the results of the Splatfest or whatever. And of course, shout out to the producer Mr. E for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. Links to his shit down in the description. Thank you for joining us this week. We hope to see you again next week and for the rest of 2019. And until next time, I don't have a good segue. My brain is still fried from the holidays.